Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferentz.
Labor addressing racial injustice in America. Another look at COVID-19 and how African Americans are being affected. And today on the show, the latest from Kelly and Ferraro. Today we focus on mesothelioma and Senator Sherrod Brown. Good afternoon and welcome to the Thursday, June 4th edition of America's Workforce. We're recorded right here in Cleveland, Ohio for workers all across America. You can find us online, awfradio.com. We got shows posted there going back at least a decade. And you can listen to this show, any show we do Monday through Friday, wherever you stream podcasts. Some examples, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartRadio. And once you get hooked on the show, we ask you to subscribe to the podcast and give us a rating. 5 stars would be greatly appreciated. All right, we have 2 guests on the show today. Ed Kelly will be joining us on behalf of the law firm Kelly and Ferraro. There's a lot of Kellys that work there. We're going to talk about that briefly on the show. Ed is a graduate of Gilmore Academy, went to John Carroll, went to the Cleveland Marshall School of Law. He's been with the firm for, I believe, 4 or 5 years now. And today we're going to focus on mesothelioma. Last couple of months, we've been zeroing in on Zantac, and that is a big case. You've been probably seeing and hearing about the lawsuit that is going on right now. It's a class action lawsuit that Kelly and Ferraro is involved in. Well, mesothelioma is a malignant tumor that is caused by inhaled asbestos fibers. So we're targeting the building trades here. And what it does, it forms in the linings of the lungs, the abdomen, or in your heart. The symptoms, shortness of breath, chest pain, and here's the sad part about this. The life expectancy for most patients diagnosed with mesothelioma, 12 months. Imagine that. You got a year to live after they give you the diagnosis. Well, Kelly and Ferraro has been very, very vigilant on prosecuting those who have, providing experience, compassionate representation, let's put it that way, to victims of personal injury and wrongful death, including those caused by asbestos and mesothelioma. They've handled 40,000 cases just in the state of Ohio, And over the years, they have garnered $120 million in settlements, $120 million. So Ed is pretty much going to run down what I just talked about, give you some more specifics on that, and what the future holds. What the future holds, because apparently, now asbestos was banned in the late 70s, but there's still a lot of buildings that have asbestos, and workers are still dealing with it. Now, we have very good protective equipment, but nonetheless, there's a lot of gaps, and that's what we're going to talk about on the show. Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us, as he usually does each and every month here on America's Workforce. And we have a lot to talk about. Number one, we'll talk about fighting for workers in the face of the attacks by Republicans on workplace protections. The leader of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, has said he refuses to move on much-needed coronavirus relief without language that would shield bad actors from legal liability when they put workers' health and safety at risk. So, the senator is set up to introduce legislation along with Senator Elizabeth Warren that would protect workers' rights by extending the amount of time workers have to take action against companies that are violating labor and employment laws. And that's what's happening in America right now. This is called the COVID-19 Every Worker Protection Act, which would require OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, to issue an emergency temporary standard that establishes a legal obligation for all workplaces to implement comprehensive infectious disease exposure control plans to keep workers safe during this pandemic. Speaking of which, Senator Brown spoke out last night talking about the lack of effort on behalf of the GOP to deal with the coronavirus. Let's listen right here on America's Workforce.
I note with some interest that one of my one Republican colleague after another comes to the floor. They're protect the president at all costs, colleagues, no matter what he does, no matter what he says, no matter how he acts, no matter how incompetent, no matter how divisive, and continue to point their finger at the Chinese for this coronavirus. God knows China deserves heaps of blame for the outbreak and the early spread of the coronavirus. No question they deserve a lot of blame for the outbreak and the early spread, and they're lying about it. But keep in mind that we're 5% of the world's population, and 30% of the deaths from the coronavirus have been Americans. And this president continues to make excuses and point fingers. And the compliant, always obedient, sheep-like members of the Republican Caucus Conference in the Senate continue to stay quiet, continue to do nothing about this president's behavior and the 105,000 deaths from coronavirus in this country.
The other thing we're going to get into with Senator Brown is he wrote to President Trump following recent comments the president made, and this was on a Toledo radio station, about the importance of bringing back auto manufacturing jobs to the United States. He's calling on Trump to put his words into action by supporting Brown's American Cars, American Jobs Act, which an expert witness said would absolutely help American auto workers, in which the Toledo Blade editorialized would put America and American workers first. So that's certainly some good legislation. You know, these are no-brainers when you think about it. We want to protect American jobs, bring American jobs, well, bring the jobs that disappeared back to America. Over the years, we've seen millions upon millions of jobs disappear in this country. It's about time we stood up to the other countries and said, hey, you know what? This isn't going to happen anymore. So we'll get into all that with Senator Brown. All right, racial injustice. Yesterday, the AFL-CIO, President Richard Trumka, leaders of the labor movement joined together. This was an online press conference calling for an end to racial injustice in America. The press conference included statements from AFSCME President Lee Saunders, Randy Weingarten of the American Federation of Teachers, the head of the Electrical Workers IBEW International President Lonnie Stevenson, Painters and Allied Trades General President Ken Rigmaiden, Unite Here International President D. Taylor, and the General Vice President Nia Wilson was along with D. Taylor, along with Bricklayers Local 8 Southeast President Glenn Kelly. That's all posted online if you want to get some more information. But they all gathered. This was the week they were supposed to do a caravan to get workers to talk about the HEROES Act, and that's been placed on hold because of the rioting going on in America. By the way, I got a statement from the Alliance for Retired Americans yesterday on behalf of the tragic death of George Floyd, and this is from Robert Roach Jr., the president of the Alliance. He is formerly with the Machinists and Aerospace Workers. He writes, the Alliance for Retired Americans shares the pain of the entire country after witnessing the video of George Floyd dying in handcuffs with a knee on his neck when he had said he could not breathe. Regrettably, our horror did not end there. The violent events of the past week may have started in Minnesota, but the aftermath has now touched all Americans in every community, including retirees. Older Americans are all too familiar with racism, having lived through the civil rights battles of the 60s, and then seen its ugly reappearance in our daily lives with every decade that followed. Older Americans have been touched personally, not just by the unnecessary tragic killing of another black man in police custody, but by the failure of our nation to come together in grief. The freedom to protest peacefully is enshrined in our Constitution, but the hatred, the division, and rioting that came with it should never be a part of those protests. Terrence Floyd, George's brother, was right on the mark when he asked that the demonstrations for justice occur peacefully. To do anything else would be a distraction from the real issues confronting Black America. Our condolences go out to the family and friends of George Floyd and anyone who's been touched by violence during the past week. Having the building that is our headquarters set ablaze is a stark reminder that, as AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka said, the labor movement is not a building. The 4.4 million members of the Alliance want seniors everywhere and our fellow Americans to know that we share your grief and with it the hope for better days ahead. That's Robert Roach, Jr., President of the Alliance for Retired Americans. Yeah, in case you didn't hear, over the weekend, the AFL-CIO headquarters was broken into, vandalized, and fires were set. And apparently, some of the archival photos and murals were destroyed there. I still don't have a complete rundown of actual damage that occurred there. Despite the common refrain that we are all in this together, a recent report from the Economic Policy Institute demonstrates that Black workers are being disproportionately impacted by the pandemic, both physically and economically. Evidence to date suggests that Black and Hispanic workers face much more economic and health insecurity from COVID-19 than white workers. The report focused specifically on Black workers, and it's the first in a series that will explore how racial and economic inequality leave workers of color with few good options for protecting both their health and economic well-being. The global impact of COVID-19, both in lives lost and economic devastation, is likely to leave a lasting mark for years to come. That comment from Valerie Wilson, who was co-author of the report and director of the EPI's program on race, ethnicity, and the economy. The best path forward, she says, requires that the painful lessons learned during this crisis better prepare us for the next one. Well, let's hope so. If we are to avoid the needlessly heavy burden borne by African Americans during the next economic or public health crisis, preparations must include plans to address long-standing underlying racial disparities in economic as well as health outcomes. Again, this is research done by the Economic Policy Institute. Great organization, epi.org, if you want to get some more information there. One more story here before we break, and this involves the Postal Service workers. Despite all the challenges facing Postal Service workers, the Postal Service is maintaining normal operations. Charles Monago, who's the national rep for the Postal Mail Handlers Union. They're part of LIUNA, Labor's International Union of North America, which is the presenting sponsor of this show. Charles sent a memo earlier this week to local union presidents and others explaining that their union members are exempt from government-imposed curfews while working. He wrote, this is a quote, "It's important to know that the Postal Service is part of the critical infrastructure of this nation, and to clarify that, as Postal Service employees, you are providing an essential public service of the federal government for the American people." He laid out the Postal Service's three-step process to work through government-imposed curfews or other travel restrictions. This is amazing. Amazing what the mail carriers do in America and how they are being treated by this administration. Again, the money is running out. The money is running out. Congress has allocated some, but right now the Republicans are saying no. Oh, we'll stay on this issue, I promise. All right, we have to take a break. You're listening to America's Workforce. Our segment with Kelly and Ferraro coming up next. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. a half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
The Food and Drug Administration has recently reported that the heartburn medication Zantac is linked to cancer. Zantac has been linked to a variety of cancers, which include bladder, colorectal, kidney, liver, pancreatic, and stomach. So if you or a loved one took Zantac and developed any of these types of cancer, you need to call Kelly and Ferraro. 216-575-0777. Let me repeat that number. 216-575-0777 for a free case review. You may be entitled to compensation from the drug manufacturer.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Welcome back to America's Workforce, recorded here in Cleveland, Ohio, for workers all across America. Once again, you can find us online, awfradio.com. And listen to this show wherever you stream podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartRadio, just some examples there. Yesterday on the show, we had Dave Meganhart on behalf of the United Labor Agency, one of our great sponsors, ulagency.org. And I'll tell you, he passed on some really, really good information that I want to briefly talk about in case you missed the show, which, again, is archived on awfradio.com. But involves a virtual career fair in response to the reopening of Cuyahoga County from COVID-19. We are holding a job matching event. This is for employers as well as job seekers. And right now they have 82 employers lined up, which is more than they normally would get. And the reason for that is it's virtual. They don't have to be contained in one place. They can have a couple hundred if that happens. I don't know if that's going to be the case, but the bottom line, you need to connect with them. And if you don't have a computer, this is the beauty of this. You can get one for free. That's right. That's right. If you need a home computer and internet access to apply for employment opportunities, the ULA may be able to help. Here's a number to call. 216-319-5993. 319-5993. And the person on the other side of the phone will determine. I mean, you have to qualify for this. And income is number one on that. So if you're getting low income or no income at all, you might get that free computer. The virtual job fair is June 15th through June 19th. You got 4 days there. We'll be able to chat with employers each day from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Registration is open anytime. And if you want to get some more information on the whole event, maybe you have a computer or a smartphone, omjcc.us. That means Ohio Means Jobs, Cuyahoga County. omjcc.us. All right. So the general number, I should give that out as well, 216-777-8255 for any questions on the event. But if you're looking for that computer, if you need a computer and you want to link up with a job, the number to call is 216-319-5993 to determine eligibility. Great stuff. Great stuff. Hey, we're trying to help as much as we can, and this is just one example. All right, let's go to line number one. Welcome to the show, Ed Kelly. Ed is with the firm Kelly and Ferraro, and he's here to talk about mesothelioma, which is a deadly disease. Ed, welcome to America's Workforce, and I have to ask you, how many Kellys, it seems over the last year and a half since we had Kelly and Ferraro. There's a lot of Kellys that come to the broadcast. How many Kellys at Kelly and Ferraro? That's my number one question. Go ahead.
Thank you, Flash. Well, we've got quite a few. I think we have four Kellys working for Kelly and Ferraro now. Only one other one is related to me. So coincidentally, it seems like that Kelly name is a good way to get your foot in the door at Kelly and Ferraro.
Okay, I got you. Now, this was your uncle, the late Michael Kelly, that was the founder of the firm. Is that correct?
That's right. My uncle Michael Kelly founded the firm along with Jim Ferraro, two attorneys. Jim's down in Miami, who comes up here and runs our Cleveland office along with John Murphy now. But my uncle Mike, he passed away in 2006. He was actually at the Ohio State Notre Dame Fiesta Bowl game that year. Passed away, and you know, our firm has been still open in his memory. We've got an office committed to him, kind of as a memorial, and you know, we think about him every day, that's for sure.
Boy, I remember that story. Yeah, that was a shocker, because he was so young. He was like in his 50s when he passed away, wasn't it? Something like that.
50s, that's right. Yep.
Oh, man. Yeah, scary stuff. Every day is a blessing, I say. No doubt about that. All right, Ed. A little background here. Ed is a grad from Gilmore Academy, went to John Carroll, Cleveland Marshall College of Law. You've been with the firm for how many years now?
10 years now. I was there in college. I would work one or two days a week. I'd come in after classes on the weekends a little bit, and then continue to work through law school as a law clerk. And then got my law degree, took the bar, and was lucky enough to be hired as an attorney.
Very good. Very good. Now, do you just specialize in mesothelioma? Is that, how does that work over there? Do certain lawyers say, okay, Ed Kelly, you're going to handle this case. You're going to be specific to mesothelioma. I know you've been doing a lot with Zantac. We've been hitting that really hard. That's really important. That's a nationwide class action case. But how did you get involved with mesothelioma?
So we've been doing mesothelioma since we opened our doors in 1997. We've been representing workers and their families who were exposed to asbestos and developed mesothelioma, as well as lung cancer, a number of other cancers, stomach cancer, laryngeal cancer, colon cancer, as well as non-malignant diseases, asbestosis, pleural disease. Asbestos is it's a nasty element. A lot of people didn't know that back in the 1940s and 50s, and then that knowledge started to become available. So thousands and thousands of people were exposed to it and eventually developed illnesses. But to answer your question, I would say mesothelioma is the majority of the litigation I do. You know, we still are litigating these cases when people get sick, when their family members get sick. We try to identify any recovery they can receive. So it's at least 75% of what I do is mesothelioma cases. Our firm is also heavily involved in Zantac, as you know. I think you've had other attorneys on discussing that litigation that's ongoing. We're also involved in other mass torts, Zofran, Xarelto. There's a lot of stuff going on. Unfortunately, people are getting sick from pharmaceutical drugs, from different products that they use. So I've had some involvement with those as well.
Yeah, I'm still baffled when you mention the Zantac. It's been on the market since, I think it was 84. And now they're coming out with all the horror stories about it. So that's why we have law firms like Kelly and Ferraro to make sure things are made right in America. It's really sad. Well, let's get into asbestos here and mesothelioma. Now, asbestos, just to go back into time, it was banned for use back in the late 70s. What's the status of it today? It's in a lot of buildings. Building trades members, we have a large audience of building trades members who listen to the show. And from what I've been gathering, if it's not touched, it's in buildings, it's around pipes. I know in many downtown Cleveland buildings, they have asbestos wrapping around the pipes. Now, if it's not touched, it's okay, but if you're over there working, they're doing any remodeling, any kind of new construction, or tapping into that, then they have to have the certain masks on. Maybe you could refresh us on how that is being handled in America right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you're right. Unfortunately, there's a legacy of asbestos in office buildings and industrial buildings and houses. because frankly, it's very good at insulating against heat. If you need to run steam piping and you want that steam to stay hot, you wrap that with asbestos, at least, you know, prior to the 1970s, so that the steam stays hot. And it's very expensive to take out. Once we learned it was dangerous, you know, most companies stopped using it. Some did not. And what you have is you have asbestos in these buildings. So if it's there, it's important not to inhale the asbestos. It's safe to look at. You know, if asbestos is separated by, you know, some kind of paper, some kind of other insulating material, it's generally pretty safe. It's when you inhale it that it gets harmful. So, you know, it might be expensive to take it out of your house or your workplace, but the thing to do is just not breathe it in. You're not going to get sick from asbestos from looking at it, but it's when these building tradesmen, you know, were working with it, either installing it or taking it out, that massive amounts of asbestos become airborne. You know, if you're cutting insulation, if you're sanding drywall, you're going to have levels of exposure to asbestos that are much, much higher than we have in our everyday lives. I'm actually taking this call outside since we're working from home during this pandemic. I didn't want to disturb anybody else in my home. But outside in the air, there's asbestos. They're very low levels. You're not going to get sick from those levels that are in the air. It's when you're working with it. It's when it's disturbed. It's when you can see visible dust. That's when it becomes dangerous and capable of causing mesothelioma and other diseases. Unfortunately, public health organizations have said there's no safe level of exposure to asbestos above that background level, around outside in Cleveland, Ohio, or wherever your listeners may be. There's no safe level. Mesothelioma can occur at very low levels. You know, it takes more to cause asbestosis. You need, that's the scarring of the lungs. You need higher doses of asbestos to cause those. But if it's in your workplace, if it's in your home, it's generally safe as long as you're not disturbing it. Otherwise, gotcha. There are regulations in effect for abating asbestos, and it's important to follow those closely.
Yeah. I'm reading, too, that asbestos is found in talcum powder. Well, isn't there cases dealing with that right now? What's the story on that, Ed?
That's right. For years, the public didn't know that, but there is asbestos in talcum powder. People are getting mesothelioma, and now that we've discovered, or uncovered, I should say, that asbestos is in that talcum powder, we've linked it back to people like Johnson & Johnson and other companies who manufacture talcum powder for sale to consumers. And, you know, it's an invisible hazard. That's always been a big problem with asbestos. It's so small, you know, unless you have millions of fibers concentrated in one space, you're not going to be able to see it. And that's what's scary about it. You know, it's in a number of products. It could be in the walls in your home. Like we said, it's not dangerous unless it's disturbed, but it's that invisible hazard that's hard to protect against. And yeah. Talcum powder, I hope that's the last product that we uncover that it's in, but that's something that came out recently as well.
So right now, I know Kelly and Ferraro has been very vigilant on these cases. Any ballpark estimate how many cases we're dealing with right now? And we'll get into, in the next segment, we'll talk about the companies. I know a lot of the companies that were manufacturing asbestos have gone bankrupt, which makes this more complicated. But is there a number right now? I know you've had some successful awards over the years, but what do we know right now?
So we don't know. I would say we are generally past the peak of the most cases of mesothelioma and lung cancer and other diseases associated with asbestos, but people are still being diagnosed every single day with mesothelioma. And if I haven't said it, mesothelioma, it's a sentinel health event, meaning that it's so closely tied to asbestos exposure that if someone's diagnosed with mesothelioma, there is a presumption that they were exposed to asbestos. There's no other established cause other than, you know, radiation, if you have extreme radiation to your mesothelial cells, or arianite, which is an element out in Montana that not a lot of Ohioans and not the majority of Americans wouldn't be exposed to. So the other thing is it's a latent disease. So, you know, everyone's talking about the coronavirus today. If someone has the coronavirus and they sneeze on me, I might get the coronavirus within a day or two. Mesothelioma, it takes a long, long time to develop. So people that worked in the trades, people that were exposed back in the 60s, they could still be getting mesothelioma today. It lingers in the body. It takes a long time to interact with your cells and produce tumors. And so, you know, we're still kind of paying the price now. The latency period is that's what that's called, the time from exposure, the time you get sick. That's generally between about 20 years and 60 years. There's not really an upper cap on that. So we've seen the majority of cases so far, but unfortunately people are still being diagnosed every day. And you think about all the people that, you know, built this country and built it after World War II and were really exposed. You know, they're still within that 60-year latency period, 70-year latency period, especially on Navy ships. You know, Navy ships were loaded with asbestos. Our men and women that served in the Navy have had extreme exposure. So I can't give you a number, Flash, but I know people are calling us every day, unfortunately, that have some kind of disease related to asbestos. And we're going to continue to represent them until we can't do it anymore.
That's amazing to me. So I could have been working, say, 1976, 77. This is before asbestos was banned in America. And not show any symptoms until today, 2020. That long it's sitting in my body. Wow. This is really, really incredible information here. Kelly and Ferraro, you can stay with us for another segment, right?
Absolutely, Flash.
Okay, Ed Kelly is his name. Kelly and Ferraro, and that's K-E-L-L-E-Y, Ferraro with two R's. We have a local number, 216-202-3450. Nationwide number. That's right, nationwide number. We have a nationwide audience, and if you're listening on a podcast right now, you can contact them. It's 1-800-398-1795. Ed, you wouldn't mind going out in the West and handling a case on this, would you?
Absolutely not. No, we've got cases in North Carolina and Minnesota right now. We'll continue to represent people nationwide.
Very good. All right, we'll continue the conversation. Also, Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us later in the broadcast. You're listening to America's Workforce. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
If it impacts the livelihood of Ohio's labor trades, you'll find it in the Labor Citizen. America's oldest labor newspaper still provides the most comprehensive coverage of the issues that matter most to Ohio's union construction industry. Each edition includes information many unions use to send out in a monthly newsletter, along with an interesting mix of feature stories and news. The Labor Citizen is a growing force for Ohio's union construction industry. The full-color tabloid is already being delivered to the active members and retirees from nearly 50 different building trade unions. You won't find this level of coverage anywhere else. But the only way to have this valuable monthly publication delivered to your mailbox is if your local union decides to join. If your building trade union is not receiving the Labor Citizen, ask why at your next regular meeting. Or send an email to info@laborcitizen.com for more information. That email address again is info@laborcitizen.com.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
Once again, welcome back to America's Workforce, recorded here in Cleveland, Ohio, for workers all across America. You can find us online, awfradio.com, and listen to this show wherever you stream podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Ed Kelly. And this is our sponsored segment with the great law firm of Kelly and Ferraro in downtown Cleveland. Nationwide number, by the way, 1-800-398-1795. We're talking about mesothelioma. And I was reading about this deadly disease. And the diagnosis is, if you are diagnosed with mesothelioma, about a year to live. Is that accurate? I mean, one year to live. You got mesothelioma, you got a year to live. Is that pretty much the case today, Ed?
We've seen people live a year. We've seen less than a year. You know, there are instances where people can live 5-6 years. Usually the younger you do, the longer you're able to live, you know, the more treatments that are available. The way it's generally treated is sometimes they will do surgery and take out your pleura, which is where the mesothelioma occurs, or your peritoneal, to kind of get as many of those cancer cells out of you as they can, and then they'll do chemo and radiation. So typically the younger patients do a little bit better with that, but unfortunately it's a death sentence. There's no doubt about it. There's no cure for mesothelioma. All we can do is treat it and try to kind of prolong the lives of those victims.
Yeah. Well, over the years, you've garnered some pretty incredible settlements. I'm looking at a $20 million verdict, a $17 million verdict, an $8.2 million verdict. This is all posted on your website, kelly-ferraro.com. The problem is a lot of the companies, the asbestos companies, have gone bankrupt. Now, how does that factor in? How do you be able to get this? Is there a fund or something for the victims? Maybe you could explain that part to us, Ed.
Sure. So that's right. Starting, I believe it was in the late 1980s, a company called Johns Manville, I'm sure your listeners know of Johns Manville, they declared bankruptcy because they were being sued left and right by individuals that they got sick by exposing them to asbestos. And what you see there is they say, we don't need to continue as a business and to pay out these sick individuals. So Johns Manville was the first. Since then, there's been over 100, potentially more, companies that sought protection under the bankruptcy code. Some have set up funds. Now, there's not one big fund. There's a number of funds from a number of companies. And basically, those are kind of sanctioned by the bankruptcy court. And they say, okay, you know, you really owe these individuals X amount, you can pay them a fraction of that if they qualify. You set up certain standards. There's a medical criteria. There's exposure criteria where you kind of have to submit evidence to say, okay, here's what disease the individual has and here's how they were exposed. Our firm handles those to this day. And there is money set aside. And that's, I would say, a large majority of the companies have declared bankruptcy, but there are still some that are what we call solvent, that have not sought bankruptcy protection, and those are viable to be sued in our court system. We file our cases here in Cleveland, Ohio. We can file them throughout the country if someone gets sick somewhere else. But there still are companies that are not bankrupt. Now, companies still go bankrupt every year. They started in 1987. They're still going bankrupt today. But we seek down every type of compensation we can for our clients.
Yeah. I recall, Kelly and Ferraro, don't you have like a mobile unit that goes around? I know you've touched a lot of the local unions, especially with the trades, to get an analysis or diagnosis of people that may be suffering from this. Is that still in operation? Maybe you could speak to that for a few minutes.
That's right. I know Kevin Corrigan's been on your show, and he's talked about that. We do health screenings for retirees. We talked about that latency period. So these individuals were probably exposed in the 60s, 70s, 80s, maybe 90s to asbestos, and they may just be getting sick today. So Kevin Corrigan heads up that front for Kelly and Ferraro. Now, that involves getting a large group of people together, and what we're dealing with in the coronavirus, we're not able to do those as frequently as we want to right now, especially because older individuals are at a higher risk of that disease. So they're not actively going on as we speak, but we're certainly going to get back out there once this pandemic's behind us.
So anybody listening right now, if there's any symptoms, I understand obviously coughing is a big one. Should they just contact, well, first of all, see a doctor, and if the doctor says there might be something wrong, contact Kelly and Ferraro? Would that be the best course of action right now, Ed?
I think so. Contact the doctor first and then give us a call. You know, especially if individuals in the trades that may have been exposed to asbestos, there's a chance they have an asbestos-related disease. It could be coughing. It could be shortness of breath. Now, not everyone that coughs and is short of breath has an asbestos-related disease, but a number of them, if they have asbestos exposure, likely either do now or will develop one in the future.
Gotcha. Any litigation going on right now that you personally are involved in Northeastern Ohio or elsewhere? I know you can't speak to the specifics of the case, but maybe something that you can touch on real quick.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're always involved in a handful of cases. Individuals that worked in steel mills, worked in auto plants, worked in the Navy, you know, where you have these extreme exposures, even people that did brake jobs in their own garage. Friction product in brakes have asbestos, and they actually, you know, Flash, you talked about bands of asbestos. That was for certain products. Brakes actually contained asbestos into the 2000s. So those individuals, you know, that were exposed to high levels of brake dust that contained asbestos, maybe getting sick for the next 20 years with mesothelioma. So we're involved in a lot of those cases, and, you know, it's terrible to see. I wait for the day that we can put this terrible disease behind us, at least as far as asbestos exposure. And, you know, we're involved in a handful of cases on a day-to-day basis.
All right, you want to get some more information, kelly-ferraro.com, kelly-ferraro.com. Let me give the phone numbers. You can get a free consultation, 216-202-3450, 202-3450, the nationwide number, 1-800-398-1795. Let me repeat that, 1-800-398-1795. Ed, great job today. Great job. Thank you so much for what you're doing over there. And for the detailed analysis of what's going on with mesothelioma. You take care. Stay in touch with us, and I'm sure we'll be talking down the road, okay?
You too, Flash. Thanks a lot.
All right. Ed Kelly, one of the fine attorneys at Kelly and Ferraro, sponsor here on America's Workforce. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us. You are listening to America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
For over 20 years, organized labor has turned to the BMA Media Group for communications and events needs. Because BMA knows how to positively impact labor's issues and spread the union message. The BMA Media Group is a union marketing, public relations, production, and events firm. So BMA Media knows what it takes to help unions capture market share, conduct marketing campaigns, partake in political education, promote labor management, organize membership development, and support issues such as prevailing wage, project labor agreements, responsible contracting, and workforce training. They also plan and produce special events such as conventions, conferences, and anniversary celebrations. The BMA Media Group, marketing union value for you. To learn how the BMA Media Group can assist your labor organization, just visit bmamedia.com. That's www.bmamedia.com for all the labor tools you need to move your union into the future.
At times, the path to recovery from a mental and substance use disorder may be unclear. But laying a strong foundation with the support of others makes all the difference. For information on mental and substance use disorders, including prevention and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Good afternoon and welcome back to America's Workforce, recorded here in Cleveland, Ohio, for workers all across America. Once again, you can find us online at awfradio.com, and you can listen to the show, any show we do, wherever you stream podcasts nationally. That's iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio, just to mention a few. Just want to promote the show we have tomorrow. We have Dorsey Hager on the broadcast from the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades, and we're also going to hear from a doctor in Miami whose research on diabetes is funded primarily from the building trades. Really, really interesting story, and that's tomorrow. Right now, though, let's go to line number two. Love talking to this guy. You see him on TV quite a lot. He's a fighter for workers. Senator Sherrod Brown, welcome back to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us once again.
Flash, good to be back.
Always good to be. Are you still hunkered down at home, or what's going on?
No, I'm in Washington. I drive here on Mondays or Tuesdays and drive back on Thursdays. I haven't been in a plane in 2 months, but listen to this. Listen to this. The last time I was in a plane, I was thinking about that. It was mid-March. In mid-March, there were 90 cases of coronavirus diagnosed in the U.S. There were 90 cases, give or take one or two, diagnosed in South Korea. Since then, about fewer than 300 Koreans have died and 105,000 Americans. That's the fecklessness and incompetence of our president, because Korea went right at it with testing and making the workplace safe. Our president's done none of that. You know, DeWine's been active and pretty good, but the president's just done none of the things to protect workers that he needs to do. You know, that outbreak in the slaughterhouse, hundreds of people were diagnosed. The president used the Defense Production Act to say, get back to work. Nothing about protecting workers, nothing about slowing the line down to make it safe, nothing about food safety. And that's been the story.
Yeah, well, those production lines were unsafe even before COVID-19. I mean, they sped
exactly
them up.
Right.
Yeah, they sped them up. Workers are losing their fingers, their arms, and now you throw in the virus, and there's hundreds that have died as a result of that.
And closer to home, Flash. I mean, think about all the people, the essential workers in our country. You know, they're generally moderate, low-wage workers. They're grocery store workers, they're bus drivers, they're first responders, they're the people that change the linen at the hospital, they're food service, they're security, they're custodians. They're called essential workers. We don't pay them that way. We don't protect them.
Right.
One grocery store worker said to me, you know, they say I'm essential, but really I'm expendable because they don't pay me much and they don't protect me at work. And that's got to change after this. We haven't learned this as a society, but our essential workers need to make a living wage and be treated as respectable citizens. We've learned nothing.
Yeah, I know Amazon, which is one of the richest companies on the planet, they ended their hero pay this week. I believe it was on Monday. And we're seeing that slowly but surely happening across those who are working, like in grocery stores. Now, let's talk about that, because I remember having you on the show with the Heroes Act, which is another part of the stimulus package here. Any movement on that? I'm hearing that McConnell maybe will water it down, but that would have extra money for these workers. Can you speak to that?
It's a lot more than what Amazon and some of these other stores are paying. They're paying $2 an hour extra, which is good. It's temporary, which isn't good, but it's $2 an hour, and that's something, but compared to what it should be. So what we've done, and we talked about this on the last couple of shows, we're calling it pandemic pay or heroes bonus. It's $13 an hour up to $10,000. And we got it in that we wanted to be a little bigger, but we were able to get this package in the House, the bill that passed the House. So the House of Representatives has passed pandemic pay, has passed hazard pay, premium pay, call it what you might. It's $10,000 per worker through the end of the year. It's a maximum of $10,000. It's $13 an hour until you get to that. And McConnell, the president's against it, and McConnell's against it because they don't want to pay workers more. But it's on the negotiating table. We got it in the House, and it gives us more standing to push it harder in the Senate with McConnell.
Now, I'm also reading you have the COVID-19 Every Worker Protection Act. Now, this will deal with like the Occupational Safety and Health Administration to help out workers and make sure their workplace is safe? What's the story on this one, Senator?
How do you send people back to work? You know, people are getting a decent unemployment benefit, and a lot of people are getting it now. It's took too long. The governor did his best. The White House didn't help. The governor was overwhelmed by all the number of people unemployed. But that's a good benefit. It's the best it's ever been. And that's the thing we really went to the mat and fought the president and fought McConnell on and got. And that's part of this. But if you're going to expect people to go back to work, you've got to have the workplace be safe. And we're simply saying, OSHA, do your job, enforce these rules, step up with these additional rules. Because if workplaces aren't safe, people are not going to want to go back to work. And the public's not going to want to do business with a company where the workers aren't safe, right, if they think that they're going to get sick. So it's just logic. But the president, you know, this president has never been a friend of workers, that your show shows. I mean, he's betrayed workers every chance he's had. He's resisting this. We keep pushing. We've got to shine a light on this. That meatpacking plant is one of the worst examples. But you know, the next outbreaks, they're going to start being outbreaks in workplaces if people are coming back to work without the safety equipment they need. That's just logic. You know that's going to happen.
Yeah. Are you aware there were 5,000 complaints to OSHA since the pandemic started and only one citation? Did you hear about that?
I didn't know the number of complaints. I know there's been virtually no citations. It's a protection. OSHA has become, under Trump, I mean, it matters who it matters who the Secretary of Labor is. Secretary of Labor under Obama was a guy named Tom Perez, who was a Justice Department lawyer. He's a really pressing, he's from Buffalo. He understands places like Cleveland. He was really good on worker safety. He was really good on the overtime rule. Secretary of Labor now is a corporate lawyer named Scalia, the son of the right-wing Supreme Court justice. He's a guy that represented corporations, made millions of dollars a year doing it, and now he's the Secretary of Labor. And he's not going to – I mean, Trump is not going to use OSHA the way it needs to be used. He's going to make it whatever the employer wants. It's going to be, you know, voluntary compliance. And if there's no accountability for – you know, now they're trying to take away any chance anybody has to sue. So you got an OSHA, you got a Department of Labor that won't enforce labor rules, and then McConnell wants to say – you can't sue. So what's when a worker comes forward, particularly she doesn't have a union, and complains about safety, her butt's out the door. We know all that, and that's what's happening here. And it's an easy thing to fix. You have an aggressive OSHA. You get the protective equipment to these companies. You slowly scale up testing, and then you can put people back to work.
Yeah, that goes into the elections matter category. One more here. We only have about a minute left. I know time is tight. American Cars, American Jobs Act. Explain this to me real quick.
Yeah, Trump went to Toledo and said he's going to put auto workers back to work, just like he went to Youngstown and said, don't sell your homes. American Jobs, American Cars Act simply says if you buy a car that's, I believe, 70%, I think it's the number we set. I introduced it several months ago. Made in America, that you get a tax credit. And it gives an incentive for companies that do it here to sell more cars. It does an incentive, too, to get these companies to come back and manufacture here. We see what happens when we don't make stuff in America. We don't have enough protective equipment for our workers and for our, for hospital people. And this is just one of the many things we need to do to keep jobs in this country. You and I have talked about trade agreements for 20 years, Flash, and how they sold American workers out. And I fought with presidents, I fought with Clinton, with Bush, with Obama, and now with Trump on trade agreements, because all of them sided way too much with corporations than they did with workers. And time for a change there.
Yep. Time to put workers first. Long overdue. Senator, you keep up the fight, my brother, and we'll talk to you next month, okay?
You too. Thanks, Blake. Glad you're well. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah. All right, Senator Sherrod Brown on our live line. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, Dorsey Hager of the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades and an expert doctor on diabetes research funded by the building trades. That's tomorrow. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.